I'm Megan.
I'm Lexi.
And I'm Jim, and this is Topic Lore, is the only place on the internet you can hear topics discussed. Megan, would you like to introduce yourself, or do you have anything to plug?
Yeah, I'm Megan Carnes. I'm a composer. Everything I've worked on recently is still very NDA, so I'll just plug my work generally. MeganCarnesMusic.com is my website you can check out.
What's the last thing you shipped that you can talk about?
I did some music implementation for the Lamplighters League, which came out October, I think. Yeah, that was fun. It's a good game. Check it out.
Cool. Heard of that one.
Yeah.
Which is getting rarer and rarer these days with the with how many indie games are out there.
There are a lot of video games.
It's true. Too many. And Lexi, would you like to introduce yourself, or do you have anything to plug?
Sure. My name is Lexi. If you want, I stream video games over at twitch.tv/DamaPlaysGames. My wife and I, we stream together. We're gay, we're cute, and we play games. It's a good time, so come hang out.
Can vouch that it's a good time. I've sat in on a couple of... I didn't talk or anything, but I watched.
Totally valid.
Yeah. That sounds wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, streaming, it gives you like just enough of a sense of watching your friend play video games without any of the demand of it. You don't feel obligated to interact. But the downside is you can't ask them to watch you play. Like, you can't ask for a turn.
Yeah. But I love how, like, low commitment socializing it is. Like, you can just, you know, tune in when you want, tune out when you don't want. And, like, you're not obligated to be there or to, like, participate any more than you want to. So that's what I really like about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you ready for some topics?
Yeah, let's do it.
Absolutely.
Getting right into it. Megan, your topic is Erik Satie's performance indications. Do you know if I pronounced that right?
You didn't.
Okay.
It's Erik Satie.
Satie.
Yeah.
All right. What about Gymnopédies?
that was right.
That was right. Okay.
Yeah.
Nailed it.
I think. Now I'm questioning myself. Whatever. So Erik Satie is this composer, like French impressionist composer from like the late 1800s or so, who I really like. And he was just a real weird dude, wore the same suit every day, had like multiple of the same suit, would only eat white food for a while. And they found like, I think it was something like 100 umbrellas in his apartment after he died. Just like really quirky dude. But I love his music. And one of the things I have this, it's like a collection of his writings and stuff from like various journals and stuff called A Mammal's Notebook. And one thing in there is a list of his performance indications, which for any like listeners who don't know what that means, it's basically when you have like a piece of sheet music, it'll give you little directions on like how to play certain parts. So it might say things like lively or like angrily, calmly, that kind of thing. Erik Satie has some that are really, really out there and really fun, and I love them.
Yeah, yeah, let's hear it.
Let's see, what are some of my favorites?
We love lists on this show.
Yeah, I picked out some I really like. There's one that's Grandly Forgetting the Present, In the Pit of Your Belly. Let's see, what other ones? I forgot to like actually underline these.
It's okay, Seat of the Pants. We also love Seat of the Pants on this show.
I meant to like actually underline them. Weep Like a Willow, another good one. With Inane But Appropriate Naivety. Naivete. With Great Seriousness and Courteous Gravity. And my favorite is Without Getting Annoyed. And I don't know exactly what these are from, but I'm assuming he wrote something that's like very annoying to play there.
Like an etude or something like that. But yeah. Did I pronounce that right?
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Feeling very accomplished.
Yeah, I just love going through these and trying to imagine, like, you know, like what that means, you know?
Yeah.
Well, and I'm looking at the list, and some of them are very, like, abstract. Like, there's one that says, with your bones dry and distant.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know why every letter of the alphabet is credited to Milton Parker?
Yeah, I don't actually know.
Do not change your physiognomy.
Behave yourself, please. A monkey is watching you.
And these would, of course, all be in Italian or French?
French, yeah.
They'd be in French, but they could be in Italian because that's the composer's language.
It is, yeah. I'm pretty sure they're in French, though. I have some, like, sheet music of his.
If I were him, I would have gotten them translated into Italian.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's how you know it's music, you know?
Right. That's how you know it's legit.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, under the pomegranates. That's a fun one.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
That sounds like something that might be an idiom in French.
Could be. Or maybe he just literally wants you to have pomegranates above you.
Yeah.
Oh, and this one's good too, with a healthy superiority. I like that one.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting, like even some of these ones that are, you know, not literal, like with your head between your hands. I assume that's not meant to be taken literally, but I can kind of imagine that feeling and like playing music with that feeling.
Play with your forehead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of the like really abstract ones, you're like, okay, like actually I get what he's saying. Look like a fraud.
Every yeah. day.
I feel like people think of classical composers as being very kind of like uptight and proper and stuff. And I like it when they are a little goofy, which most of them actually are. So yeah, it's a fun little music history tidbit for y'all there.
Yeah, yeah. This isn't quite the same thing, but it makes me think of like prepared piano.
I love prepared piano. Yeah.
Which is like, it's the same idea, except instead of doing something to your mental state, you're doing something to the piano.
Yeah, I love one of my like kind of things that I daydream about is just having like a warehouse full of prepared pianos, just all different ways of preparing them. So like one with screws and one with putty on the strings and one with paper in there, and just all kinds of stuff. It's very like fun and experimental and playful.
Yeah. Searching for under the pomegranates.
Uh-huh.
I actually modified it to beneath the pomegranates to see if that came up with anything as an idiom.
Uh-huh.
Beneath the pomegranates is like it has a bunch of results and they're all like different poems.
Oh.
Apparently there's a very poetical phrase, the world thinks. So anyway.
Interesting.
If not poems, then they're at least like written in a very flowery way. We'll lounge beneath the pomegranates, palm trees, apple trees, under every lovely leafy thing. And walk among the vines.
So it evokes this like paradise feeling.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, like luxury.
This is a quote from The Palace and the Garden by someone whose name I dare not try to pronounce.
I wonder what else could benefit from like wacky performance indicators.
Yeah.
If you showed up for work every day and your boss said like, you know, you need to do your job today with a shy piety.
That would make work a lot more interesting. I think I'm into that. Yeah.
Serve these hamburgers like a nightingale with a toothache.
Moderate and very bored. That's me at past day jobs I've had.
Are we ready for another topic?
I think so. I think, you know, we've gone through the best ones in the list.
Actually, let's talk about prepared piano more.
Okay.
Is this something you've worked with in the past, a method you've worked with in the past? And have you considered preparing other instruments?
I have not actually used like a real prepared piano because I don't have an actual piano, but I do have like a sample library of prepared piano sounds that I use a lot. So
yeah,
I'm trying to remember what ones they all have. There's like hitting the strings with the mallet. There's some where they put like little coins on the strings or hit the string with a coin, I think. Ones where they put putty on the strings. Very fun.
It feels like it's specifically like exploring a particular, because you could, there's lots of ways to make noises, especially if you're using samples, but exploring everything you can do with the piano specifically seems like it's an exercise that would be interesting.
Yeah, just because of the way a piano works. Yeah, I feel like there's so much you can do with it. Like you could put things on the little hammers, put things on the strings, just all kinds of stuff. And yeah, I haven't ever prepared any other instruments, but I do like I don't know, using like kind of not extended technique, but like on the violin, for example, if you play over the fingerboard, that's called flutando, and it makes like kind of like a very
it has a name. Fantastic.
Yeah. It has like a very like flute like sound, so that's really pretty. And then there's something called a Bartok pizzicato, which is where you pluck, but you pluck the string like up so that it snaps back down onto the fingerboard and makes like this really percussive sound. It's pretty cool. Very interested in like using, I don't know, kind of like less common articulations and ways of playing and that kind of stuff. It's very fun.
Yeah, I'm reminded of Tom Morello, whose work in fact, it may continue to this day like this. But his work in Rage Against the Machine was very like interesting noise-making experimentation. I don't know like how he came to this, but he used like a whammy pedal and a particular, like just a very limited set of effects pedals. Mm-hmm. And I think part of the point for him was like, here are my constraints that are going to make my art interesting, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like, he could have used anything. There's so many different ways to modify a guitar tone that like you can get interesting noises so many different ways. But like for him, for some reason, this was the way he chose to do it.
Yeah, that is really cool. I definitely think that like constraints can like force you to be creative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I really like that.
All right, now are we ready for another topic?
Yes.
Lexi, your topic is instant food from other cultures. Why isn't everyone eating Maggi noodles?
Yeah, why aren't they? So I feel like the staple, at least, you know, as far as I know, the staple kind of instant food is like instant ramen, right? Like everyone knows if you want just like a cheap, easy, like college, you know, dorm meal, you like have instant ramen. And I eat it all the time, right?
There's like mac and cheese.
That's true.
There's like rice-a-roni.
Mm-hmm. Like this like box food.
And none of these are as simple as ramen, though. There's Hamburger Helper comes to mind.
Yeah, but even that's like a little bit more. You have to buy extra ingredients. You need
the hamburger.
Yeah,
or exactly. Else it's just Helper.
No one wants just Helper.
Well, that's true.
But I discovered this brand of masala, like Indian masala noodles called Maggi noodles, because my mother-in-law's name is Maggie, and she, you know, met someone who was like, oh, your name is Maggie, just like my favorite noodles. And she was like, what's that? And so I discovered them, and like, they're amazing. They're just as easy as ramen noodles to make, but they're like, you know, masala flavored, so they're a little bit spicy and they're delicious. And I eat them like once a week now. And it just makes me wonder, like, what other instant foods from other cultures am I missing out on? Because I just, you know, it's not part of my, you know, food vocabulary.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, we're of the wrong cultures to really properly answer this question. But so off the top of my head, Trader Joe's has a pretty dang good like set of Thai noodle, or did, I haven't bought it in a while, Thai noodle boxes where the noodles are like pre-cooked and they come vacuum sealed.
Mm-hmm.
So you're just like getting the noodles out of the vacuum sealed package, and then you open up the sauce on top of it and heat it up. And I would always add frozen broccoli and just put the whole thing in the microwave.
Oh yeah, that sounds good.
That does sound good.
Yeah, it's tasty stuff. And it's like still not as simple as ramen. Although yeah. You don't have to wait for the water to boil.
I guess that's true. But like it really doesn't get easier than, you know, pouring hot water into something and then eating it.
Yeah, especially if you have one of those hot water taps.
Mm.
I don't mean the ones in the sink, although I suppose that would be an option. I mean like you have the device on your counter that keeps water near a boil all the time.
Yeah, for like making tea or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. You just pour it over the ramen and instantly it's right in the name, instant ramen.
Yeah, instant ramen, yeah.
You can eat it right away. Or you just bite the brick.
Yeah. Also a valid way to consume it. No, but I just wonder what else is out there, because like, you know, there have got to be, you know, every culture on earth basically has their own variation of noodles. So, you know, what other kinds of instant noodles are there? I mean, I'm sure they're all delicious.
Yeah, there's got to be some real good stuff out there.
One thing I always hear about is how much better fresh pasta is versus the I don't even know what you call it.
Like dry pasta.
Dry pasta, yes, that's the word for it. And that's the Italian style pasta, which makes me wonder, like, is fresh ramen amazing? Is that what you get at restaurants?
Yeah, yeah, I think it is. I think that's right.
It's not that much better.
I think it depends. Like, I like fresh pasta, but I like dry pasta too. Like, they're just kind of different. I wouldn't say necessarily that fresh is better, but it's kind of like it got a chewier texture.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, exactly.
Can be pretty good.
One thing I've discovered since I started paying more attention to cooking, we've been making soups because it's soup season, which is highly recommended. Make soups. And one thing I discovered, like, I invented this. You got to give me credit if you use it. If you add cream to your soup, it makes it more delicious.
Yeah.
Like creamy broth, mm-hmm. it turns out, is one of the most delicious things in the world. And somehow, doubly so with ramen broth.
Mm-hmm. Mm, yeah.
I don't know how this happened, but if you like any of the instant ramens, you take the broth and you add like heavy cream to it, probably even half and half, but I bet that wouldn't be as good. And you have ambrosia.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that sounds really good.
Creamy, rich broth. Yeah. That sounds delicious.
That's a pro tip. Yeah. I will sometimes melt like peanut butter and put in like some sriracha and soy sauce and make mm-hmm. kind of like a slightly fancier ramen. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Kind of like good. A peanut sauce. Yeah.
I've been meaning to figure out how to make peanut sauce. Although I'm scared to have it in the house. I think it might be too addictive. It really might be unsafe to have in larger than the little tubs they give you at the takeout.
Well, you just need to find a recipe that's like very involved and a lot of work. So there's that barrier to eating it.
Yeah, there you go.
What that would mean was that since it's so involved, they're like, oh, I'd be like, oh, I better make a really big batch. What I want is like, I want a recipe for just like the 2 tablespoons of it.
Yeah, I often wish for tiny recipes. So it's just me and my husband, and I feel like we always have way too many leftovers, like even if I like have the recipe or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is one of you in a situation where you can take the food to work and give the leftovers to people?
No, we both work from home. We do eat the leftovers, but you know, it's for like a couple days. It's like, all right, can't eat this anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Like it's usually baked goods, which I think is like a little bit less weird than sending in a lasagna or something. But like my wife will often take the extras to work if we think it's too risky to have around the house. And park rangers love baked goods, apparently.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, soup is unfortunately a little bit heavy to transport.
Yeah.
In large quantities anyway.
Right.
Yeah, that's very true.
A little bit messy too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would inevitably like spill it all over myself somehow.
Yeah, that sounds familiar. One thing that when I started cooking, I got an apron because I thought this will be fun. I'll have a little costume for when I cook. Turns out it's actually very useful.
Yeah, they make those for a reason.
Right. And one thing I've noticed is that like, oh, when I sit down to eat dinner, now I don't get food on my shirt. And so like what I haven't done but should is just put my apron on whether or not I cooked the meal.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
It's like a bib, but
it's like a bib, yeah.
Yeah, for grown-ups. Yeah. The big bib, yes. A big bib for Big Jim.
I love it.
What you really need is they have those bibs for kids that have like the little scoop in front to catch your food. Like,
yeah.
That needs to be a thing. We need to normalize that for adults.
I agree.
Normalize scoop bibs.
Yeah.
All right, we need to come up with one instant food from another culture. I'm doing a search right now.
Yeah, here, improve my life by letting me know.
Yeah, because I can't think of like any off the top of my head.
All right, there's like favorite comfort food from your culture, which is not the same thing. Mm-hmm. What about like, what would like frozen latkes count or something like that?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
I guess, hey, here's a question. What's the instant ramen equivalent in like Mexican food? There's got to be something.
Oh, here we go. What is the top instant food in your country?
Yes. All right.
In the UK, pot noodle is very popular.
Pot noodle? What is that?
Oh, apparently it's a instant ramen brand. That makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maggi noodles. Maggi masala noodles. Both Greece and India.
Mm. They're very good.
Kraft dinner. Did you know about Kraft dinner?
Oh, I grew up on Kraft dinner.
It's so popular in Canada. They just call it dinner.
Yeah, are they
KD? That's what we could call it. KD.
Are you like not allowed to eat it for lunch or something?
Oh yeah, it's like how you're not allowed to buy soft mattresses at the mattress firm. Like they have them. They have them. They just won't sell them to you.
Uh huh. It's a firm position they take.
Mee goreng. I don't know how to pronounce that. From Indonesia. It looks like it's stir fry noodle dish.
Okay.
Instant stir fry noodles, halal certified. Sounds it seems good. Like it's just noodles again.
Yeah.
Noodles are the standby, I guess.
Yeah.
Universal.
Yeah. I mean, noodles are good, so makes sense to me.
Yeah. In Mexico, they like Maruchan cup noodles, usually referred to as Maruchan, regardless of actual brand.
Yeah. So I guess the Mexican equivalent of instant ramen is instant ramen.
Yeah. Although, like, do you make a distinction, or should you morally, between the kind that's in a cup and you pour water into the cup, like the
supply your own container?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I presume that would mean you don't boil the water on a stove. You just use the hot water from your sink.
Yeah. If your sink's hot enough, I guess.
Or you put it in the microwave.
Sure. I think the distinction is legitimate. Like the delivery mechanism matters.
Yeah.
Okay. This person says, do hot dogs count? If not, I'd say something like canned pasta or insurance mac.
What is insurance mac?
What is that?
I think it's a typo, or rather, not a typo, but
an autocorrect.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It could be Instant Mac. It's probably Instant Mac, actually. I'm really sad that I figured it out because I like the mystery.
Well, I guess there's canned pasta, like Chef Boyardee.
Yeah.
SpaghettiOs.
Yeah.
I saw a review of canned hamburgers once.
Oh.
Those are popular in what, Germany, I think?
Are they?
Canned cheeseburger. Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, there's no way that the bun comes out
not being soggy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering about that.
Yeah, yeah. That is a thing about like some foods, you have to cook prepare each part separately and then assemble it at the end.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Although now that I think about it, putting like a hamburger in a panini press would probably be pretty good.
Yeah.
Even then, I don't know. I won't have the tomato to go on afterwards. Anyway, are we ready for another topic?
Yeah.
Yeah.
My topic is seasonal decorations. We just came out of the best time of year, which was the Halloween to Christmas months. Mm-hmm. Like you can get away with putting Halloween decorations up in like September, mm-hmm. and you can get away with leaving your Christmas decorations up till like now. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of the year, you've just got a boring house with nothing on it. And I feel like we can fix this.
Yeah. How do we fix this?
Like as a culture, we can invent, there's holidays, other holidays. And all we need to do is choose to associate decorations with those holidays.
That's true.
We love lists on this show. Lists of holidays.
I feel like some people decorate for Easter.
Yeah. I
see St. Patrick's Day, maybe.
Yeah. Easter is a little bit specific for me. Like non-inclusive is maybe the word I'm looking for.
Sure, the very Christian holiday.
What do you call the thing that they ripped it off from?
Like spring equinox.
Yeah, something like that. Rabbits, totally associated with spring. Mm-hmm. You can cover your house with rabbits. Mm-hmm. Movable feasts. That's a good term.
Yeah,
it reminds me of movable type.
There are a couple people by me who have like those 12-foot skeletons that they keep up in their yards all year, and they just like change their outfits depending on the time of year.
I feel like this is a thing because we have neighbors like that too.
Yeah, it's pretty great. I don't know, in the spring they'll have them like watering flowers.
See, I really like that because it gives you kind of a framework for how to decorate your house. You don't have to come up with something kind of brand new. You just have to figure out what to do with the skeleton.
Yeah,
it's really good.
All you need is a 12-foot giant, and then you could let it die.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Sure.
Preserve its skeleton appropriately.
Right. Let get those bugs the beetles that clean the bones for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Easter controversy. There's controversy over the correct date for Easter.
Well, I'm sure.
There's a Wikipedia page for it. This is not as funny as I was hoping. I'm scanning this page. I was hoping for like something that would be as good as those stage directions that you were listing earlier. All right. After the Easter thing, you can have the skeleton holding explosives.
Mm-hmm, sure.
For what, 4th of July? What's the holiday?
Our recreational explosives day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I guess there's a big gap there.
Maybe we just don't have enough holidays in general.
Yeah, we should make more. I'm trying to think. What's in the spring? I mean, my birthday's in May, so we could just have everyone celebrate my birthday.
Yeah, I'd be into that. My birthday's in April, so we could just keep it rolling.
Oh, yeah. Perfect.
Yeah. Let's see. There's Valentine's Day, Memorial Day, Labor Day.
Mm, that's a good one.
Labor Day is a good one. Juneteenth.
Mm-hmm. That's another good one.
Counterpoint, though. Sounds like a lot of work, and I don't want to do a lot of work on a holiday.
You don't want to decorate your house.
Sounds like a lot of effort.
What if you had those like programmable LED strips that you could just change the colors? Then you'd have a fun programming project.
Yeah, that's true.
It'd be like having a Zachtronics puzzle for every holiday.
That would be fun.
Ooh, Arbor Day.
Oh, Arbor Day would be fun to decorate for. When is Arbor Day?
It's a floating Friday.
Oh.
April 24th through 30th.
Okay, I didn't realize it was one of the floating holidays. Okay.
It's a movable feast where you don't eat.
A movable tree.
Yeah.
Yes.
Then isn't Earth Day in the spring sometime?
Earth Day is April 22nd. It also says varies after that. So I don't know what know what you want from me.
Nobody can agree on when holidays are, apparently.
Yeah. May Day is decorative.
That's true.
May Day has that thing where you wrap the ribbons around the pole.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Have you ever done that?
I have never taken part in that ceremony.
No, me neither. But neither. It seems like a thing that would be kind of fun.
There's a neighborhood kind of by mine that like was founded as a German neighborhood. And they have like a year-round maypole decoration there. It's very fun. Very festive.
Cyber Monday is on this list. But Talk Like a Pirate Day is not.
Start decorating for like Toyotathon.
Shark Week. Mm-hmm. Is Toyotathon, is that on a fixed week?
I have no idea.
Is it a movable feast?
I don't know. I'll look this up.
There's no Toyotathon page for Wikipedia.
What?
March Madness.
Oh, yeah. This just says it's an annual event.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
March Madness is ableist anyway.
That's true.
Are we ready for another topic?
Sure.
Yeah, on that note.
Yeah.
For this topic, we're going to be reading the poem Delhi Metro by Satvik Soni. Again, unsure how to pronounce these. Who would like to read this poem?
So I found this one. I saw it on Instagram and I really liked it. So Megan, if you want to.
That's how it works. Yeah.
Yeah. I brought it. So my work is done.
Okay.
All right. Cool. We have a volunteer.
I love the Delhi Metro. 4 million stories unfolding all at once, isolated together. I love the strangers in love, the incels who record them. I love falling for strangers and their blue hair and ripping my heart open when they get off at house costs. I love forgetting my earphones back home while going through tunnels with no reception, alone in a crowd with my thoughts to haunt me. Leaving my seat for cutthroat middle-aged women. That hollow heroic moment. I love affordable public transport. I love higher taxes for the rich. The rich who will eat everything we love, unless we eat them first. Bring some salt, buy some ketchup, show your love, for all love is politics.
One thing I really like about this poem is that it looks really long, but it's really short to say.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I was like, I have to read this, but it's so long.
Yeah, the lines are short, I guess.
Yeah, no, it was good. I liked it. A lot of it reminded me of like writing the L here in Chicago, even though it's like on the other side of the world or the space.
Public transit always feels like this.
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Especially like with the cultural context of self-driving cars, at least, especially in the Bay Area. I don't know about the rest of the world, but they really feel oppressive around here. Taking public transit feels like an act of defiance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's definitely that element of like both isolation and like togetherness. Like when you're crammed in that, you know, subway car with a bunch of other people, like you're all in it together, right? But also you're kind of just like in your own world with them all around you. I don't know.
Yeah
definitely.
Yeah. I like that poem a lot. It like, I mean, reading it makes me feel the way I feel when I'm on the train.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely felt that too as I was reading it. Yeah, like very evocative of that exact feeling.
I think it's interesting that blue hair is universal.
Yeah.
just like instant noodles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you think getting off at Hauskas is like a, is that something you have to know, you don't have to know what that is to get the joke? Or is it just a place?
I was wondering about that. And I was also wondering if I pronounced it right.
I also was wondering that.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of assumed that it was just, you know, just a place. And, you know, you just have that experience of like falling in love with some random stranger on the subway and then they leave and like you never see them again. Like, I don't know. I feel like that's also kind of a universal experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
The line about loving to forget your earphones is interesting because I will always fill my life with content whenever I can.
Mm-hmm.
It's like an addiction that I have, but. Now, this is something that we've talked about on the show before, but like the shower is like the last place you can go where you don't have content because the phone doesn't go in there.
Well, but it could.
They're going to invent a showerproof phone and then no one will ever have shower thoughts again.
Well, are we not already in that future? I thought that many phones are.
I don't have a showerproof phone. I guess I could just put it in a Ziploc bag.
You could.
Yeah.
I could be watching movies in there.
I've definitely considered getting a shower speaker.
I have one of those. I like never remembered to actually use it though. But I don't know. It's kind of nice.
But when you forget your content and you're just out in the world and you just have to like, oh, my phone battery died and I still have 15 minutes to walk back at home. That really does kind of feel luxurious.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Like 15 minutes just to think.
Yeah.
Is a gift that is impossible to give yourself on purpose. But when it happens to when it just happens to you, then it's great.
No, I totally agree. Like I really miss that about commuting to work. Because you know, on the subway there were parts of it where that were completely dead in terms of cell service or Wi-Fi. So I would have those forced periods of downtime, and I really, really miss it.
You didn't have like a Game Boy?
I did not bring a Game Boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like never actually bring headphones on the train or anything. I don't know. I think it's because I do music for my job. I like to give my ears a break, I guess.
Yeah,
sure.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So I actually like just like kind of listening to the environment around me and stuff. And then, yeah, I also like when I go for walks and everything, I like try not to look at my phone and I never listen to anything. Anything. Yeah, I don't know. It's really nice. Yeah, not having something I'm watching or listening to or reading or whatever, and just being able to like think and look around and actually take in the environment around me.
Yeah, I start my ADHD medication tomorrow.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. Which means that I get to find out like of all the ways it could change my life, maybe I will be able to. Able to is not the right. Not the right phrase, because I could do it. I could do it at any time. I could just go for a walk without my phone at any time, but I don't because I'd be bored.
Yeah. No, I also have ADHD and I understand like being bored is like the worst feeling in the world to me. Like it's like almost painful or something. I'm pretty good about not having it when I go for walks, but if I'm just sitting in my apartment, I'll just always be looking at my phone.
Oh yeah, with all your entertainment options right there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty bad.
In a new place, my computer is now much less of a trek from anywhere else in the house than it was at the old place. Mm-hmm. Like at the old place, it was like in the corner of the house and upstairs, and I had to go upstairs and over there to use it. But in this new house, I can just go sit down at any time. You know, I want to check some email or what have you. And every time I do it, there's a chance I'll get stuck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally know that stuck feeling. It's not fun. It's like I don't actually want to be there, like scrolling my phone or looking at my computer for hours. Like I'm not having fun, but I don't know. I'm just like stuck in the loop, you know, just looking at stuff.
Yeah.
I'm lucky because our apartment's just like very, very long and my like studio is at the very, very back. So I have to like make a whole trek if I want to go be on my computer.
Right.
Which helps.
Yeah, it's interesting to kind of try and like hack your own executive function by constructing like barriers or friction in the right places.
Yeah. But yeah, I hope the medication is good.
Yeah, me too. I don't know what to expect. Like I've talked to a bunch of people. So I have like a broad idea of the various things one might expect. Mm-hmm. One person said it makes you really horny, which I was not expecting. Another person said that like if they take it like afternoon, they just can't sleep that night.
Yeah, that was true for me.
Yeah. Do you currently take meds?
No. So I have problems with like anxiety and found myself to be like very, very sensitive to stimulants. So none of them worked for me. And then I tried Wellbutrin, which can apparently sometimes help for ADHD, even though it's mostly like an antidepressant. Mm-hmm. But that gave me tinnitus. Fun, but rare side effect. Thankfully, it went away when I stopped, but that was very bad for, you know, my job.
Yeah.
And just in general, it was super annoying. And after that, I just kind of gave up because I was like, I don't want
to. I just noticed I have tinnitus right now.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Apparently, my brain is extremely good at ignoring that.
Well.
And until I'm reminded, and it's like the memes that say you are now breathing manually.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I'm sorry I reminded you of it.
No, it's okay. I wonder if Wellbutrin gives everybody tinnitus, and it's just that some people can't ignore it.
Yeah, that could be. I was working on a film score at the time, and thankfully, I got off the medicine and the tinnitus went away before I finished it, because I listened to some of my first drafts of the music I did for it, the mixes and stuff, and they were wild. You could tell exactly which frequencies I couldn't hear well, because those were
That's unfortunate, but it's also really interesting.
Yeah. I went to college for 2 years. I took some music classes, and I had a professor who claimed that the new Backstreet Boys album has a notch at 800 hertz.
Oh.
just throughout the album. Maybe he was making shit up, but if not, that's an incredible ear.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
You got to put that through a spectrograph and see if he was telling the truth.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't remember the frequency or the album. That was an example. Are we ready for another topic?
Yeah.
Sure.
Lexi, your topic is becoming immortal by being predictable.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I have kind of a very well-known set of formulas for jokes that I like to make. And as people get to know me or as they spend more time with me, they kind of notice, right, that I'm always making these same patterns of jokes. And I think that's actually really cool, because at a certain point, even if I'm not there, people can think, oh, you know, if Lexi were here, I know what joke she would make. I know what she would say in this situation. That's really cool, I think, because it means that to some degree they're simulating me in their mind. They know, certain things that I'll say or do.
Yeah.
And that is comforting to me, because it means that I'm kind of living on past, if I die, when I die, if people remember me and they remember the things, the patterns that I follow, the jokes that I make, I kind of live on in that way. And I just think that's it's cool and comforting in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really interesting.
Yeah. I am kind of obsessed with death and my relationship with it and what effect it's going to have on other people and vice versa. I think about it all the time. And this sort of idea of little ways you can stay connected, even if it's just mental hacks.
Yeah.
You can stay feel like you stay connected to someone who has died, or stay connected after your death. I don't know. That's sort of, I don't have anything coherent to say about it, but it's deeply meaningful to me.
No, I
mean,
like
I feel like this is way more interesting than kitchen hacks.
Yeah, it's nice to hear that you feel that way too. I think about it a lot too, and not to get super super dark, but it's death is just something that absolutely terrifies me, and I don't believe in any kind of afterlife. So having this idea that, well, at least I'll kind of live on in some form, as people can kind of simulate there to me to a very limited degree. It's comforting.
Yeah.
There's a Saturday morning breakfast cereal from 2013. I was just able to find it, and I'm going to read it to you. We could have done this as the poem, actually.
Mm.
I think that would be an incredible poem. It's a man reading a letter. I told you if there were something beyond the grave, I would contact you. I ordered this package to be sent in the event of my death. If there were a way to reach beyond death, I would have stopped this package before you got it. I'm sorry. But I've set up a win-win for you. Either you see me again or you get a box of candy. We were both sensations to each other. Eyes, ears, nose, hands, mouth. So long as I can tickle a few of those, I'm only gone from myself, not from you. I'm sorry I couldn't stop this package, but I'll try to get the one for next month.
Aw.
Wow. I like that.
Yeah.
I really like the line about, I'll only be gone for myself, not for you.
Yes. Yeah, that was powerful.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I really love that.
Below this, there are two comments, both made this year, which is weird.
Hmm.
That wasn't worth ruining the silence. The other thing you can do, you can set up the whole, what do you call it? The thing where they freeze your body.
Oh, yeah.
Cryogenics.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My understanding is the process is that you get life insurance and then you set it to pay out to the company that's going to freeze your head.
Mm-hmm.
And what you get out of that, I think the chances of it actually working out so that you get revived are extremely small. But if you're an agnostic, you already have maybe an extremely small chance of feeling like there's more to life after death. Yeah. But if you're atheist, like I am, I'm pretty certain, then a very small chance is actually, that's pretty cool. That's nice. That feels good.
Sure. It's better than zero.
Still haven't done it. But, maybe with my new meds, I'll have the motivation to do things like that. I shouldn't try to build this up. I shouldn't build this up too much, because there's lots of things it could do And probably the list of things it's actually going to do is pretty small, is my guess.
You could also go the other direction and like get a brain scan and upload it.
Yeah, I was thinking about that.
It's another situation where like you're gone from yourself, but not from others. Like I've talked about this before. Like you could totally run this podcast through machine learning algorithms and get an approximation of me. Mm-hmm. Probably reasonably convincing in an idle chit chat kind of a way, you know?
Yeah, superficially.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's something that I don't need to do that. That's something that like this archive is going to exist. Well, maybe I need to make sure this archive exists. This is why I keep talking about burying my podcast in the desert. You know, just, this is what is this? Episode 229. We can bury 229 cassette tapes in a box in the desert.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Love it.
Leave the GPS coordinates in my will and hope that SatNav still exists.
After the apocalypse.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I hope that the EMP event doesn't erase the tapes.
Just got to re-record them on vinyl or something.
Yeah.
Oh, vinyl podcast is good. I've been getting email from services that are like, your podcast audience is pathetic. You should use our service to put your podcast on YouTube. If I wanted my podcast to be on YouTube, it would be on YouTube.
Right.
But I do want my podcast to be on vinyl, and it's not. That's a service that you could sell me on.
That would be so many records. I'm just imagining how like physically big the collection would be.
You get like, what, 25 minutes a side or something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
Well, it depends on the size of the record, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, on the big one, on the lowest speed, on like presumably you could invent a bigger record player, but like on standard record players, I think the longest side is like 28 minutes or something like that. What varies is like how willing you are to make the grooves smaller and more likely to skip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I just said vinyl, but I wonder like what is the most durable physical media? Probably not vinyl.
Cockroach DNA.
There we go.
Yeah.
Use CRISPR to infect the cockroach population of the world with 226 episodes of Topic Lords.
Listen to Topic Lords wherever you get your podcasts, including Rat DNA.
Yeah. Uh-huh. If you're from the future and you retrieved this MP3 audio using DNA sequencing, thank you. Thank you for freeing me. Are we ready for another topic?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Megan, your topic is living in different climates. For example, my experiences with the harsh winters of Chicago versus sweltering Austin, Texas summers.
Yeah. So I grew up in the Chicago area, and growing up, I was always like, these winters are awful. I hate having to scrape ice off my windshield. I hate snow and when it gets all dirty and slushy. I hate when the wind blows on my face and it's painful and my snot freezes and my tears freeze, and my hair freezes and just all the things. Like, I gotta get away from here, you know? Yeah. And I moved away. I lived in Austin, Texas for a while and then LA for a while. And both of those get, at least where I was in LA, which was in the valley, really, really bad hot summers. And I found myself starting to miss winter, which was wild because I never thought I would miss winter. You know, that's a big part of the reason I moved away. And mm-hmm. I found, like, discovered about myself that I'm actually someone who likes having a change of seasons throughout the year, like a very drastic change of seasons.
Yeah, it's nice to have variety.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. How do y'all feel about that?
Yeah. I mean, I grew up on the East. Well, I grew up all over, but like my teen memories were I was on the East Coast from like in the New Jersey area from when I was like 13 and 14. And then I was in Florida and then I moved to San Diego and then I was in San Diego for like 15 years. So like I've got a couple years of New Jersey in there. So I remember the winters and I love the cold. I love being in cold weather and having spent so much of my life in California. I have no idea if I can trust this. I have no idea if I can trust this memory of loving the winter. Like, for all I know, I just couldn't handle it now.
Well, so you haven't been back since then?
I have, but only like briefly.
Yeah. The one thing I will say about living somewhere with like real winters is the cold doesn't get to me as much as the lack of sunshine. It just being gray for like 5 months straight, 5-6 months.
Yeah.
That definitely gets to me more.
I grew up in Waterloo, Ontario. So very similar weather to Chicago, I think. Very cold winters and very humid and hot summers. Mm-hmm. And then I moved to the Bay Area, California, where there's no weather and it's just the same pretty much all year round. And I don't miss the seasons at all. I love it here.
That's awesome, though. Yeah, that's the kind of thing that, like, in theory, I thought I would love. And LA was probably the most like that out of all the places I lived where the weather was pretty similar.
Pretty constant, yeah.
Yeah, I thought I would love it. And at times I did. But yeah, I don't know. I kind of missed, like, the novelty of, like, a new season starting, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It was, like, a very surprising thing to discover about myself.
Yeah.
But now, of course, it's, like, winter here. And we had, like, our super cold, like, polar vortex at the beginning. Was it the beginning of January? Yeah, I think so. There was a day when I was walking outside and it was, like, negative 15 wind chill. And, like, the one tiny spot on my face that I forgot to cover with my scarf or whatever was just stinging. And my tears were frozen. And I was like, wow, I could be in LA right now. Like, I sat on the beach at Christmas one time. Like, that was nice. Like, why did I move back here? But yeah, overall, I really like the seasons.
Do you find that it's something that you appreciate more having been away from them?
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like that about Chicago in general, like a lot of things about it, I didn't realize were great until I moved away and missed them and came back. But yeah, I think, you know, growing up with it, it's just like, this is how it is. There are seasons, you know, like very drastic, different seasons. You don't really appreciate it, I don't think, until you live somewhere else that doesn't have as dramatic of seasons for a while.
Yeah, the dramatic seasons where I grew up were just, they just got to me, like the temperature swing between like the winter and the summer and just how humid it was during the summer. I just couldn't take it anymore. I had to move away. It's like probably the primary reason I moved away is just because those humid summers were unbearable for me.
Yeah, I can absolutely understand that too. And yeah, I think I hated like the summers in Austin more than I hated the Chicago winters because Austin, Texas gets really, really bad summer, like humid, but also, you know, like 105 degrees regularly. And yeah, I don't know. I've never fainted from being too cold, but I have fainted from being overheated. So
yikes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but frostbite is real too. So
that's true. Yeah. But I know how to layer. You know?
Yeah. One thing that I've never done, and I feel like is necessary to have experienced in order to know whether you can stand winters, I've never driven in icy conditions.
Oh, yeah. I like memories of being a teenager, and I don't really drive at all anymore because Chicago has like decent enough public transit. But as a kid in the suburbs, or as a teenager in the suburbs, I did. And I remember like skidding on ice a few times, but they like teach you how to handle that. So I just kind of, my car was fishtailing and I like got out of the skid and it was like fine. And in hindsight, I'm like, wow, I was like 16 and just like handling like skidding on ice like a boss. Like,
wow.
It's pretty cool.
That must have been some good training, some good driver's ed.
I guess so.
Is that something that they like, they put you in icy conditions so you could practice it, or they just tell you how to do it?
They just tell you like what to do.
Wow.
Yeah, that's doesn't seem like it would be as good as like, okay, here's an icy road, and they shove you out there.
I'm sure there's like liability reasons they don't do that. But yeah, I think it was like very like instinctual. I remember it being just like not really thinking about it.
Yeah,
I don't know. Driving in like a blizzard is very scary because you can't really see anything.
Yeah, that does sound bad.
Yeah, but you know, don't drive anymore, so it's fine. They take the L and they have these little like heated lamps that you can stand under like a little lizard while you're waiting on the platform. It's great.
Yeah, in San Diego, they had the opposite of that, where that one guy was once electrocuted by the power system that lit up the bus stops. for like months after that, all the lights were just off while they were just checking everyone to make sure the electrical was good.
Oh.
And so you had to wait for the bus in the dark.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. That sounds like the premise, like the beginning of like a horror movie or something.
The horror already happened. Like a guy died and then the real horror begins, which is that I had to wait in the dark for months.
Haunted by the guy who was electrocuted.
I guess the other horror is just San Diego had a really shitty public transit system relied on. Like, you would think that would be the city where I learned to drive instead of after learning to drive after I moved to the Bay Area, the place with the good public transit.
Yeah, the irony. Yeah, despite growing up in an icy, wintry place, I never learned how to drive in icy conditions because I never learned how to drive. And I've just always lived in places where the public transit has been good, so I've never had to.
Yeah.
And you have kids, right?
I do, yeah.
Like, that was something that I definitely observed, was that, like, I could get away with not driving when it was just me, but having a kid really necessitates it. And I'm wondering how you get away with not doing that.
It definitely limits your choices. Like, you have to be very particular about where you live, where the kids go to school, what kind of activities you participate in, and like whether you can get to them. So you definitely are like more limited in what choices you can make, but it's doable.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
But I definitely feel the pain when they want to go over to their friend's house and their friend lives like up in the hills. And so we have to like get in the cargo bike and I have to, you know, bike up a 45 degree slope with the two kids in the front.
Yeah,
that's a good workout.
Yeah, that's for sure. It's great though. I'm overall like really happy about living a car-free life. It's really nice. And like, I love my bike. I love my cargo bike and it's a great way to get around. And the buses here where I live are pretty good. So, you know, we make do and it's pretty nice.
Yeah, that's awesome. My husband and I, his van is paid off, but if it weren't, we might just have gotten rid of it just because Chicago has like a pretty decent public transit system and we both work from home. So like, we don't have to go places very often. We can walk to like our grocery stores and everything.
Yeah.
Nice. And yeah, I don't have kids or anything. So yeah, I don't know. And like, I can drive, I have a license, but the last time I drove was like a year ago when my husband had surgery and I drove him home. I just really hate driving. So it's, yeah, nice living somewhere where I can be totally fine not driving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's all the time we have for Topic Lords. Megan, if this is something that you want, where can people find you on the internet?
My website is megancarnesmusic.com. I'm kind of still on Twitter. I'm MagmaCranes on there.
What's it like in Twitter these days?
Weird. A lot of bots.
It's bleak. It's bleak.
Yeah, well, yeah. I thought they were going to get rid of all the bots.
Oh, no. There are so many more bots. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know which social media to plug. I'm megancarnes.cool on Blue Sky. Megan Carnes on co-host.
And Lexi, if this is something that you want, where can people find you on the internet?
I am Alexicographic on bleak hellscape that is Twitter and twitch.tv/.
Yeah, people are still on Twitter, huh?
Yeah.
How's it going over there?
Some people are, a few of us.
Yeah.
It's not great.
No.
But on Twitch, I'm twitch.tv/DamaPlaysGames.
What's the bot situation like on Twitch?
I think it depends what channels you go to, but in my corner of Twitch, it's not too bad.
Are bots helpful there?
Sometimes.
The bots like are the things that the people who run the channel run the bots to?
Yeah, I have one that I wrote. I'm pretty proud of it.
Yeah? Does it like do closed captioning or something?
So my bot's name is Sergeant Pepperbot. Uh-huh. And he collects quotes that people say in the channel and stores them and can do a bunch of other cool stuff. It's neat.
Well, that's cool.
And it was a fun project, too, to kind of teach myself JavaScript.
Yeah, that's rad.
Yeah, that sounds fun. Thanks so much for being on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you. Yeah, this was great.
Hi, this is Jim. This is the audio I append to every episode of Topic Lords. Congratulations to our newly anointed lords. This episode was edited by Esper Quinn, who can also edit your episode if you contact them on Twitter. If you'd like more people to hear the show, you can tell your friends about it, or rate and review us on whatever podcast service you use. You can add content to the Topic Bucket by emailing topicbucket@topiclords.com, and you can contribute to our Patreon at patreon.com/topiclords.
Patrons get episodes a week early, and you get access to the Topic Lords Discord, where you can discuss topics with all the lords that hang out in there. See you next episode.